Welcome to The Food Fix, where we talk with innovators who are figuring out how to better feed the world. I'm your host, Petrolano Ali. Every minute, people flood supermarkets and grocery stores to buy food. We often do not think about how the brands we consume leave from seeding companies to the farm to green processors, distributors, and retailers. There are powerful actors who decide what we eat and how much gets to us. According to Philip Howard, 40% or more of the market at almost every key stage in the food system in the US is controlled by four firms. That has implications for harming the environment, human health, and vulnerable sections of society, such as poor people, recent immigrants, and minorities. Philip Howard is an associate professor in the Department of Community Sustainability at Michigan State University and a member of the International Panel for Experts on Sustainable Food Systems. He is here with us today to talk about his new book, Concentration and Power in the Food System: Who Controls What We Eat? Hello, Philip, and welcome to The Food Fix.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Why did you write this book?
Well, I talk about some trends that aren't very obvious to people. They're kind of hidden. Because if you look at the supermarkets, for example, if you go to the margarine section, you might see about a dozen different brands, but about half a dozen are controlled by one company, another four or five by a second company. So those two companies alone have about three quarters of the brands you see on the shelves and about the same amount of sales, about 65% of sales. So the book helps illustrate which firms are dominant and some of the strategies they use to try and increase their dominance. But the book also points out that these strategies always are opposed by people. And in some cases, these companies are really struggling to increase their power.
So the book says power and concentration in the food system, who controls what we eat. So who controls what we eat, actually?
Well, it depends on what stage of the food system you're looking at. So, you know, for margarine, it's ConAgra and Unilever. Soft drinks, it's a little more obvious. It's Coke and Pepsi. In beer, it's Anheuser-Busch InBev and SAB Miller. But there are some other parts of the food system that are even more hidden, like distribution. So there's really just one national firm that controls a huge amount of the distribution to, for example, restaurants in this country, and that's a firm called Sysco. And then their seeds is another part of the food system that's pretty hidden from people. And there, we have a handful of firms that really control most of the global market for proprietary seeds, and those numbers are getting smaller. We have, six big seed chemical companies, and if all the planned mergers and acquisitions go through, we're going to be down to just four in the next year.
What is the extent of this control?
Economists talk about the pricing power these firms have. So when four firms control about 40 or 50% of the market, it's very easy for them to raise prices because they'll simply signal their intention to raise prices and the others will follow suit. We had some very clear examples of this in the beer industry. After Anheuser-Busch was acquired by InBev in 2008, they immediately raised prices, which was about half the beer market in the U.S. Another 30% of the market was controlled by SAB Miller, and so they immediately matched those price increases. And then a few years later, the same thing happened. InBev raised prices, SAB Miller matched them. So pricing power is just one way where we pay more for these food products in many categories like breakfast cereal, snack foods, soft drinks. They're all controlled by very few companies, and we tend to pay much higher margins than the cost of those products. But there are other negative impacts too that come along with this power, such as the ability to convince people to eat things that aren't maybe not necessarily healthy for them, like snacks and soft drinks. So we've had food-related health impacts in this country and globally associated with consumption of foods that aren't very good for us, things like hypertension and diabetes, for example. These are disproportionately targeted at the more vulnerable populations in society, like children, for example. Breakfast cereals are heavily marketed to children. One of the things that researchers at Cornell found is that even the cartoon characters on the boxes are designed to be placed at a certain height on the shelf so that the eyes of those characters are gazing at the child, and they even track the child as they move down the aisle. So it really encourages children to pester their parents to eat more of those foods.
How does this power and concentration affect which food we get to eat? How does it affect those who go hungry?
Well, the retail shelves are very controlled by these big firms. You know, there are a couple ways they do that. One is category captains. So many retailers assign the responsibility of designing product placement and where food goes on the shelves to their largest supplier. For beer, it's very common that Anheuser-Busch InBev is assigned the responsibility of not only placing their own products on the shelves, but designing the placement of all the other products. So that makes it much more likely that, say, a small beer company, a craft brewer, is not even going to get on the shelf, or if it does get on the shelf, it's going to have a lot less space than the Anheuser-Busch InBev products. This is very common in a lot of food products. And another example is slotting fees. These are fees that are very secretive. We don't know a lot about them, even though congressional panels have been, you know, investigating what's been going on. But we do know that for a small food firm to try and get on the shelves of a local retailer, it can cost them tens of thousands of dollars just to put one product on the shelves of a few stores. And for national distribution, say a big supermarket, it might cost millions of dollars. So this really steers what we see on the supermarket shelves. It's from the big firms that can afford to pay those slotting fees, and the smaller companies have a lot of trouble getting on the shelves at all.
Talk about the effect of this power and concentration on minorities, poor people, and immigrants, the environment. How does this hurt?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we found in the Lansing area, for example, is that, you know, there's a lot more shelf space allocated to unhealthy products like soft drinks and snacks in the more low-income parts of the city. And there's actually more diversity of products available. There are more soft drink varieties available in low-income areas than in more affluent areas. So somebody who might be, you know, faced with a choice of Coke or Pepsi in the more affluent part of town, for example, when they go to a low-income part of town, they have a lot more choices and a lot more shelf space allocated to those products, and it steers people into buying more of those products. You know, the ends of shelves, the middle of the aisles, these are places where less affluent areas, more space is allocated to the less healthier foods. So, you know, in terms of the environment, you know, that happens not necessarily at the retail level as much as at the production part of the system. And big firms have the ability to shape government policies that allow them to pollute more, escape penalties on pollution. You know, meat production, for example, is very resource intensive. There's a lot of pollution as meat production has become more and more concentrated in the U.S. And they're often, you know, located in areas where the neighbors are poor, can't afford to move away from this pollution, and they have negative health impacts from being located next to these facilities.
You know, someone listening to you would say, but why should I care? Why should I know about where power and concentration is in the food system? Why is it important to know about this?
Well, it affects everyone, even though it disproportionately affects some people. Even if you're affluent, and even if you shop at a very high-end retailer, your choices are still shaped by the dominant firms. And so, for example, if you think, well, I'm shopping in a natural food store and I'm buying organic foods and therefore I'm making better choices, you know, a lot of people make those kind of purchasing decisions in effect in an attempt to improve their health, they may not realize that most of those organic firms have been acquired by big corporations. So companies like Danone, the French yogurt company, and General Mills, Kraft, Kellogg, these are all companies that own a lot of different organic food companies. Because this is so hidden, people may not even realize how they're affected by it.
Talk to me about the consequences of this concentration and power in the food system.
Yeah, one of the things we've seen is, you know, the top 10 packaged food and beverage companies in the U.S. now control about 32% of sales. You know, these firms are run by a board of directors and a CEO that are, there's a very small number of people. I mean, you could take the people who run these 10 firms and fit them all in a reasonably sized room. If you did that, you'd recognize that they all come from pretty elite backgrounds. They tend to be men, average age in their 60s, educated at Ivy League or other elite universities. So they're not really representing the diversity of our society, yet they're making decisions about what kind of foods are produced, how they're produced, what kind of options people have, you know, what's on the shelves, and ultimately that affects the kinds of foods that we eat.
So is this book part of a project funded by an organization or just a personal initiative?
This project wasn't directly funded by any organization. I did complete it while I was working for Michigan State University. You know, as part of my research appointment here at the university, I conducted research. But yeah, it doesn't have direct funding from any federal agency or any nonprofit or private organization.
So is there anything positive about concentration and power in the food system, or is it all negative?
Well, the book talks about a number of the negative impacts, and you know, personally, I think even if there were no negative impacts, the fact that so few people, you know, some elites are deciding, making decisions about what we eat, I would say that's a bad thing in and of itself. But some people would say, you know, it may be a positive that because Walmart controls about a third of food sales, when they do make a decision to, say, you know, increase the energy efficiency of their operations, that has a much bigger effect than if a smaller firm were to do the same thing. But I'm not sure the positives outweigh the negatives in an example like that, because, you know, it'd be much better to have power distributed more equitably through society.
Who are you targeting with a book like this?
The book's primarily aimed at students, upper-level undergraduates and graduate students. But the book avoids a lot of academic jargon. You know, it talks about a lot of academic literature and academic concepts, but it should be accessible to a lot of people. So I also hope that people who are simply concerned about these issues will pick it up and, you know, look for ways to make a difference.
Philip Howard is an associate professor in the Department of Community Sustainability at Michigan State University's College of Agriculture and Natural Resources, an affiliate of the Center for Regional Food Systems, and a member of the International Panel of Experts on Sustainable Food Systems. His work can be found at www.msu.edu/TildeHowardP. Copies of his book can be found on Amazon. Thank you so much, Philip, for talking to the Food Fix.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. Knowing who controls what we eat, do you think there should be a deconcentration of power in the food system? You can email us with questions and comments at foodfixpodcast@gmail.com. The Food Fix is produced by the Translational Scholars Program at Michigan State University's Global Center for Food Systems Innovation. Our theme music is the song Watching My Garden Grow by two of our favorite Michigan artists, Lindsay Liu and Josh Rilko. MSU's Global Center for Food Systems Innovation is a development lab funded by USAID. I am Petulano Ali. Have a great day.